the fan. On demand. Log on to Sportsnet590.ca. Sign up to automatically receive the latest reports, features, and Fan 590 show highlights. They don't hide their feelings, which might just hurt yours. This is Brady and Lang in the morning. Sportsnet 590, The Fan.
Yes, 5:32. It's Brady Lang for a Wednesday. You keep wanting to say Tuesday. It is Wednesday. The best part of the short work week is that not only does it start later, it seems to end earlier. It's Greg Brady, Jim Lang, and Mike Farwell is back from a brief, if not complex, sojourn. And you'll wake up this morning with the Los Angeles Kings being Stanley Cup finalists for the first time since 1993. Memories of Alexei Zhidnik and Warren Reichel and that guy, Waters, Tim Waters, not Bill, Tim. Remember Tim Waters?
Yeah, I remember him. We try not to
Jan
talk about
Erickson.
93 too much around here, but yes.
Well, it's less painful this morning than it was the Sunday morning after whatever that was, May the
was
22nd
it?
Or whatever. It's less painful this morning.
I don't know if it is. I said to Jim as I was working on the scripts for the sports updates
there
this morning.
Scripts?
There are some. I mean, I try to use very few. It's in my contract.
Right. But it still hurts a bit.
Even typing 1993 just conjures up these images. I'll tell you, it's hard on Leafs fans.
It would have been a lot harder, though, to watch them go down to the Montreal Canadiens in four games or five games.
Not a chance.
It wouldn't have happened.
No, not right. A chance.
Okay, so the team that was better than them got smoked in the final, but somehow the magic of hockey would have allowed the Leafs to win that series.
The genius of Pat Burns.
I got it. Okay, Patrick Roy with the 10 overtime wins, and he just would have started, you know, playing like Richard Sevigny. I got it. I'm good. That's great.
Now, what did you think of the hit by Brown? Which I've watched the replay, and it looked to me like he was aiming for his shoulder. And
well, it's going to be fine. Nothing's going to come of it.
Yeah, I can understand why the Coyotes were freaked out and don't at the end, but I didn't think it was a direct knee-on-knee, let's try to take his leg
off. No, but I don't think Dustin Brown's the most honorable player I've ever seen by a long shot. I do think there's some diving in his game. I do think there's some embellishment. I do think there's some late hits. I was happy for Dustin Penner to get the goal. You talk about the amount of players that were just railroaded out of Edmonton. And I know that Edmonton got something for him with the Colton Tuber trade, you know, two trade deadlines ago. But Sheldon Surrey, bad guy, cancer, can't play anymore. All of a sudden he's playing on Dallas's top two. Dustin Panner, fat slob. You know, we're 30th in the league and he's terrible. He can't play for us. He's playing on the top two lines of a team that's now in the Stanley Cup Finals. So Tambellini's doing a hell of a job there. It's like George Bush said to Brownie right when things started picking up in New Orleans with Hurricane Katrina. You're doing a hell of a job, Brownie. Hell of a job, Tambo.
And now Oilers
draft.
Yeah, right. And now they trust him for the draft.
Yeah, of course they do.
Oh, good. Okay. Good luck with the draft, Tambo.
So I don't look at it and see the Kings as being. It's one thing to say they're the team to beat. It's another to say it's their cup to lose. I think a lot can happen. In the final, I will say the last couple games we've seen a little more of a human side of Jonathan Quick. He let in a couple that he clearly would have wanted back last night, and I give the Coyotes credit to play in front of those fans who've been, you know, honestly kicked in the teeth for four straight years. And you might say, what, as we started the show, what about us in Toronto? With, you know, your team will always be here. You know, tickets will all, you know, all 82 games will be on TV. You don't know any of that in Phoenix right now, even with the news of a prospective buyer and working on an agreement. There's never a guarantee there. So those fans have put up with a lot, and those players have put up with a lot. I don't care what anyone says. It is a distraction for a pro athlete to wonder if a team's not going to be there in the fall or not.
Well, I mean, if you're playing for the Coyotes, until you see an actual document, official document that's been signed by somebody, how can you believe any of the rumors? Because there have been so many from year to year. How can you believe anything? You never really know. What do you tell your wife and kids? Are we going to be here next year? I'm not sure. We'll have to see.
It's never a guarantee. High of 23 degrees later today. Mike Farwell, a sports update next, and we'll get to the Jays, who just started too slow last night and almost another near incident with Brett Laurie and a Major League Baseball umpire. Because it's only been a week. It's Brady Lang on Sportsnet 590 The Fan.
The Fan on demand. Now, more of Brady and Lang on Sportsnet 590, The Fan.
They walk to the bank. Out at second is Brett. Brett Laurie is caught. He's out. He's going to say to the umpire what happened. He slid into the bag, bounced off. And the question was, did he come back and retouch? And now John Farrell will come out here to pick up the argument for Laurie as the inning is over.
542, Jerry Howarth on the call last night on Sportsnet 590. The Fans, a day game today, by the by, as the Tampa Rays will play the Toronto Blue Jays. We'll talk to J.P. Arencibia coming up at 8:20 this morning. It's Ricky Romero going against James Shields, and then the Blue Jays are off to Arlington to play Texas for three games. Yankees got a win last night. Phil Hughes, another good start. He's getting better for them as he gets the ERA under five after a real rough start to the season, and they're winning games, closing them out. In fact, without Mariano Rivera, Boston loses to Baltimore. The Orioles keep chugging along, and of course, the game in Tampa. So the Orioles have a two-game lead on Tampa, four-game lead on the Blue Jays. But as Mike mentioned, the story will be, for to some extent, Drew Hutchison getting flamed up in the first few innings. But Brett Laurie made, I wouldn't even call it an aggressive move. He did exactly what he did against against the Tampa Rays last week without throwing the helmet, without putting the helmet in his hand. And then he stopped. You even saw the umpire put his hand out and say, slow up, big fella. It's twice in 8 days. Nothing came of it. He didn't even get ejected. But it's something that is this is not a one time incident now, it's a trend.
I could see John Farrell speaking to him in the dugout after the incident was over, Greg. I think he's trying to teach him a lesson. You can't keep doing this because the ump's got the call right. Replays time, whatever angle you looked at it, he did take a step past second. That's in the rule book, so they were in the right to make the call. He was wrong. And at that point, that's why you have a manager to argue your case. You look towards the dugout, Farrell comes out, he chirps with the umps. And then there's no problem. He's got to learn that.
Well, you can also argue your case without being aggressive, without charging towards an umpire, without throwing a helmet. And you talk about Farrell and maybe doing a little bit of managing in that dugout to help this, to help Laurie try to get it sunk in. Jose Bautista doing the same thing, trying to take Laurie away from whatever it is that's bugging him and settle him down a little bit. But I got to ask, after a four-game suspension, isn't that enough to teach you the lesson?
What'd you learn? Yeah. I mean, most people didn't think you'd be playing even now after the action. And had the helmet taken a bad bounce, because to me it took the only bounce it could have taken, bounced into him, but had it taken a worse bounce, hits him in the groin, bloodies his nose, we're not seeing him for another month or so. So, there's a lesson to be learned here. I feel for John Farrell here, but this is what a manager has to do, is get these guys under control. And forget about all the white noise of the apologists for the Blue Jays and the apologists for Brett Laurie, who are simply going to say, it's his energy, it's how he plays, I wouldn't want him any other way. I never heard that Cal Ripken didn't play the game with passion. I never heard that guys like Paul Molitor, who was here, or to a lesser extent, guys like Joe Carter and Robbie Alomar before the spitting incident didn't play with that kind of energy. There's no excuse for this, and man, the umpires are watching that last night going, see, hothead, meathead, moron. And I'm not saying it. Umpires are saying it. Is it fair? No. But will it cost the Blue Jays? Yeah, it will.
Oh, and it's going to cost them big time. And it's going to cost them big time in a season where they could be a playoff contender. And so it could come down to a couple of games, and he could be the reason those games flame up or not, Greg, because of his actions. And eventually you do have to grow up and understand there are rules, and the umps are right, whether you like it or not. And if you have someone to argue, you have the manager. He can't keep fighting all these battles.
But this is already costing Brett Laurie, is it not? Rob Drake immediately throws up his hand, says, don't argue with me.
Yeah.
Don't even talk to me.
Exactly. So the reputation is already well known, well earned, dare I say, after the suspension.
Would Curtis Granderson get an explanation? I bet you he would.
Darn
would
right
Chipper
would.
Jones? I bet he would. Would guys that have been in the league 10, 12 years and put the service in get a little more leeway? Of course they would. They absolutely would. And there's no excuse. It's the same thing with technicals in the NBA. Can Kobe give a look that a rookie can't? Of course he can. Of course he can. He's Kobe Bryant. Beyond the obvious, it wasn't a run that was going to make a critical difference in the game. I don't look at that and think that, given how the game ended up. But at the same time, look how the call, didn't go the Jays' way the other night, right? With the home run hitting the pole. And it wasn't a ninth inning home run. It wasn't a walk-off home run. And they just kind of take it, deal the adversity of it, and move forward. Then they scored the next six runs. Whoop-de-doo.
But that's baseball in a nutshell, though. I mean, things happen in the second inning. You have no bearing in the ninth inning, and you can still have a lot of time to win the game. And he acts like every play of every moment. I mean, get ready for the bell. Everyone loves his passion. But there's a difference between passion and understanding the nuances of baseball, where You know, games can change in a half inning. Two innings from now are going to be totally different. You could have a totally, like, look at some of the balls the Rays threw away last night. They almost gave the Jays the game again last night.
And situationally, this was different. This was the eighth inning. The Jays are trying to get something going in terms of the comeback because they're still within striking distance. I still think the two big takeaways from this are, A, it doesn't appear as though Brett Lourie learned any lesson at all, and B, he appears to be some sort of target now with the umpires.
Well, Shai Devi is a colleague of ours. He wrote a piece on it today, or just after midnight, so a few hours ago. And I think he's dead wrong on the call. Shai thinks the call was dubious. Shai thinks the call may have had some kind of impact bearing from Lourie's relationship with umpires. I think he's absolutely wrong. Shai might not have got a good look at it again. He suggests that there's a replay suggesting Lourie didn't lean at all. He's stutter-stepping a little bit off the bag between second and third. And then instead of coming back, which would have taken 1 millisecond to do it, we've all had to tag up in games and go back and touch the bases when a guy makes a catch like that. Look at Deion Sanders, that famous triple play. He almost crossed paths with Terry Pendleton. They both would have been, or Pendleton did pass him, was out, and then they didn't even need to throw the ball to first. The Blue Jays didn't in that triple play. So, you know, Lourie cuts back inside the bag and try to take a shortcut. And great for the Tampa Bay that they saw it and that he got caught, because he did get back to first in time.
And now the big question is, how does Brett Lourie and the Blue Jays repair the damage with the umpires? Like, he's got to figure out a way.
There's nothing you can do. I mean, gift baskets don't cut it. You just got to mature.
Right. I mean, so zip it the rest of the season and act like a professional.
Is it a rookie mistake, too? Or is it the exuberance? Because, Greg, you're right on the money. Not retouching second base, it's quite surprising. I mean, it doesn't take much from where he was after he stutter-stepped to touch the bag and continue. And he would have been back into first without any difficulty. So it's really curious as to why he obviously wasn't thinking about it at all. But it would have taken nothing to put your foot on second base and continue on to first.
When Jerry Howarth and Alan Ashby say the right call got made, when Mike Wilner says the right call got made. Okay, this isn't, we don't need to put this to much more jurisprudence than this. The right call got made. The Jays are on the wrong side of it, and he had no business arguing it. In fact, you wouldn't have blamed the umpire because, let's face it, he wasn't going, excuse me, sir, can you tell me more, when he's rushing towards the second base umpire. The words are already flowing. There's no doubt about it. So he easily could have got tossed before he even got there. He was lucky he didn't.
I don't understand why he needs now to go like a bull in the china shop towards every ump for every call. I mean, I know he's full of energy and all jacked up and passionate about every play, Greg, but at what point can you just walk over and calmly say, hey, why did you call it like that? Would you not get a different response? I would think you would.
He's absolutely has to control him. It's got to be something that they work on with him. There's no doubt about it. Let's do Now and Then for May 23rd.
Now on Brady and Lang. Now and Then. A contemplative and reflective look back on great and not so great snapshots in time. And 4 minutes of radio Greg and Jim don't have to come up with on their own. Not exactly a string.
On this date, I was actually staying across from this amazing building in New York City. The New York City Library was dedicated in 1911. So we're talking over 100 years now. Do either of you have library cards? This is why I wanted to bring this up.
No, I don't.
Absolutely, I do.
And do you use them?
Absolutely, I do.
Yeah.
I have a card.
See, we have a family card. I never seem to have it in my possession, but I got to go to the library a lot for different stuff because kids have activities in the community center where the library is. And I never think to myself, take 5-6 books out. But I don't read books that often.
Yeah.
It's obvious, right?
Library's fantastic. All kinds of things.
It is. Well, yeah, the Ford should really open more of them instead of trying to close them.
Don't you read on vacation?
I sleep on vacation. I try. Vacation, what's that? No, I try and get some time in. The problem is it ends up being 8 magazines, which is just Sportsnet magazine I read nonstop. And Toronto Nightly. I get both those and I read them. I really enjoy Farwell's 411. Mike, you wrote a great piece yesterday. It was super.
Thank you. Appreciate that.
It looked like a lot of time was put into it.
I worked hard on that piece yesterday.
Hey, in 1995, today indeed was the Oklahoma City bombing. Today was the remains of the Alfred P. Murrah Federal Building being imploded after the bombing, which involved, of course, one Timothy McVeigh, who, again, never been seen with John Oler in the same room, and Terry Nichols. I don't know who Terry Nichols looks like.
Never seen him. We were on our honeymoon. Our wife and I were on a tour bus to go to some Mayan ruins, and sitting behind us were two grief counselors from Oklahoma City. And they would go away on vacation every time because they spent like 2 months grieving. And they knew the firefighter and the time pitcher. They knew the guy whole story. It was bizarre to talk to. They're very nice people, but it became too much for them.
It's amazing how prominent Oklahoma City's become on the sports scene with the Thunder, that they haven't sort of referenced that more, because that was almost all the city was known for. It was heavily what the city was known for in the last, 15 years or so. Owen Hart, on this date in 1999, died in a ring at a pay-per-view event in the WWE, and famously, the show went on. Still a great debate as to whether indeed it should have or not.
Never should have went on. And Vince McMahon, I think that he'll live with that shame forever. It should have just been canceled right there. Someone under his employ died during a maneuver. How could you keep going on like nothing happened?
Well, I think it explains a lot about Vince McMahon and his approach to it. It is all about the show, after all.
He seems to still be sleeping well. That's the odd thing. Irish captain Roy Keane sent home by manager Mick McCarthy ahead of the World Cup. We never see that, generally speaking. You see a big bust-up between player and manager right before an important international event. Can you imagine if a Canadian Olympic player went home, hockey player, men, 2 days, 3 days before the Olympics were to start?
I can't even, Sidney Crosby gets in a dust-up at practice with
Mike
coach.
Babcock.
Right, they send him home. No, the country would shut down.
Good for talk radio. I wouldn't complain. Indiana Jones and the Crystal Skull came out on this day in 2008. I tried to mention it. We didn't have time for it yesterday because we were too busy noting that Tebowing is going to be featured in the Madden 13 game. And Jeff Blair was trying to admit he wasn't a big Three's Company fan. But Indiana Jones and the Crystal Skull came out then. There's still talk now of a fifth Indiana Jones movie with Harrison Ford, which people just don't have a desire for. I don't get this.
So make it stop.
Crystal Skull was this Shia LaBeouf one?
Exactly.
Yeah, because that was after The Last Crusade, though, which you thought might have been
that's Crusade. A long time between sequels. You go from 89, right, with the Harrison Ford, Sean Connery film, to 2008. That's a long wait. Like, we're talking, I'm saying it's too long for Anchorman, and that's 9 years, basically, that's going to be between Anchormans. So, it's pretty remarkable. George Lucas needs the money, though, okay? You gotta call a spade at this particular point. Birthdays, Drew Carey. I believe he was on a show called The Drew Carey Show. How old is Drew today?
I'm going to guess he's 54?
I was going to say 55.
He is indeed 54. Gary Roberts. The body's still young, but the mind is awfully old.
What?
How old?
He's 45.
42.
He's 46.
Wow.
Yeah.
Good for him. I should eat some more wheat germ.
Brian Campbell, NHL defenseman of much renown.
32.
Is he up? No, 28?
28. No, 33. Remember, he got that, his big deal was like 3-4 years ago, right?
Wow, time
Marvin
flies.
Hagler. Boy, an absolutely dominant middleweight in the 1980s. Dominant!
He was my favorite middleweight boxer in the mid-80s. I'm going to say he's 51?
I think a little older, 56.
He's 58. So he's
58?
Yeah, indeed getting up there.
When's his comeback?
He's got to come at some time,
yeah,
right?
Exactly.
He's got to find a way. And that's it. Oh, Jewel turns a lovely 38 today. She's nice. Except for that vampire tooth. It's just a bit odd. 5:55, it's Brady and Lang on Sportsnet 590 The Fan.
The Fan. On demand. Wake up and smell the sports addiction. This is Brady and Lang in the morning. Sportsnet 590 The Fan.
Fastball hammered to center field deep. Going back, Rasmus. He's at the track, at the wall, and it's gone. A three-run bomb for Carlos Peña on a 2-0 fastball. And there's the doubling of the lead. It's now 6-0 Rays on top.
Rays put a few balls out, including a solo shot from Luke Scott. B.J. Upton with a no-doubter with no one on. The damage could have been worse. You heard the three-run homer by Carlos Peña. The intriguing move of batting Carlos Peña to lead off, paying off for the Rays with a 3-RBI night. And Drew Hutchison got banged around in the 4 innings he pitched, 6 earned runs, only struck out 3. And then, of course, Crawford let a few more runs across, 8-5 the final for the Tampa Bay Rays. But that's where it's at. It's a big game today, no doubt, with Ricky Romero going against James Shields to try and take two out of three before you go to Texas. Tomorrow's last night's forgotten if you can win today.
Of course, they have Drew's high school pitching coach in the booth with Buck and Pat last night in the Sportsnet broadcast on Sportsnet 1. And just as he starts talking, Drew starts getting knocked around. He's like, maybe I should leave. They're like, oh, no, you're not the cause. Just hang around another half inning. He goes, no, maybe I should leave. He thought he was jinxing his poor kid.
First the curse of the Bambino, now the curse of the high school pitching coach.
Yeah, I guess Hutchinson had a lot of family and friends from the area there, so that's kind of tough on him.
Yeah, got rocked pretty good last night. Baltimore keeps winning. We should point that out. And the Orioles get a really big start by Matuz with 9 strikeouts and a walk, went 6 innings. He's had a rough go of it, but the Orioles keep winning. The Jays having a tough time getting real consistent. I mean, 5 out of their last 6 is pretty good, and then to lose last night. So they hope it's not the start of something that ends up taking them out a little bit. But the talk will be about Brett Laurie this morning and Laurie getting really upset. We can talk about both the call and the reaction if you saw it. 416-870-0590, *590, 888-666-0590. In defense of Laurie, he's not nearly as demonstrative as he was last week involving umpire Bill Miller. He didn't throw a helmet. He didn't look like he was going to assault the umpire. I think there was less reason for the umpire in this case to be scared. Saying that, he was far more on the wrong side of the call this time around than he was on the right side of the call. It's basic fundamentals. He might have been angry at himself, but any look at the replay, and I can't see how any objective person doesn't see him take a slight step. He slid into second base to get the play straight on a hit and run. Fly ball goes out to center field. So what he's doing is, for whatever reason, he kind of hopped off the bag on the third base side, kind of hopped and hopped for a second, took a step towards third base, then saw the catch was made, and then hopped back up. And instead of retouching the bag, which you have to do once you've made a positive movement towards the next base, he kind of cut along the inside of the bag, almost on the infield, and sprinted his way back to first, got in, but then the Rays appealed the play, and they said, no, you didn't retouch the base, and you're out.
And the umps got the call 100% right, and, I mean, I'm sure that was part of the reason John Farrell was talking to Laurie in the dugout. Yes, he's arguing his case, but he's saying, Brett, you did take a step, and you didn't tag up. There's nothing you can do about it. You're in the wrong.
And you could hear that in the call by Jerry Howarth on the broadcast last night, because as the play was developing, he said, now, did Laurie retouch second base? Oh, here's the appeal. No, he did not. Laurie's called out. So Howarth was able to see it all right from the booth.
They got Brian Butterfield and Torrey Lovullo. Both had to run out. Both the base coaches had to run out to pull Laurie back. You could actually see how animated he was still in the dugout. It was kind of an odd scenario. He's like absolutely crushing, just destroying like an energy bar or something like that, because he needs more of that, really. And he's just pounding back the granola. And like his it was like a chipmunk around mid-November. Headed into exile for a little while. And he wants to go further at John Farrell, and it's Jose Bautista that basically had him pushed to the other end of the dugout. Look, we can read way too much into this. And look at last week, right? Little yelling incident between Dwayne Wade and Eric Spoelstra. So what? Talk about the overhyped story of the spring. The Heat aren't getting along. They canceled practice on Friday. What no one tells you is so did Indiana. They had 2 days off. They didn't need to practice. And Miami's been unbelievable the last 2 games. So, like, I could have an argument with my wife in the yard. We could actually have a discussion about something. And because it's out there, the neighbor, it might be one argument. We get along famously. I don't know anybody that's more in love than myself and Mrs. Brady. Hi, Mrs. Brady. But I would say this. Then the neighbors, if they hear that one argument, oh, there's problems between them. Brady's. Not really. We just happen to have it right out there. And that's the problem in this kind of public circumstance with Spoelstra and Wade. And I look at this with Laurie and Farrell, and we can read a lot into this, but John Farrell, both you guys mentioned it. John Farrell, this is a big part of a manager's job, is getting a player to see things the right way as a professional and play the right way as a professional. And Laurie has great professional qualities. He needs to add this to the resume. Okay? Patience. To some extent, mix patience with passion, you're going to have a hell of a baseball player.
And don't you have to pick your spots as a professional? There are times you have a right to argue your case. And there's other times you have to zip it and let your boss, your manager, do it for you. And I don't think Brett's figured that switch out. Every call that he doesn't like, he seems it's his duty to freak out and start yelling at the umpire. I mean, and just like the neighbors, you said the story about if you were in the backyard with your wife, they would whisper around the neighborhood about the fight. Well, the umps have, I mean, it's every umpire and crew in the American League knows about Brett Laurie now.
Yeah, everybody got to see it last night.
Yeah.
I just want to see him find the switch between 100 miles an hour and maybe 50. And I know we talked much earlier in the season about Laurie's all-out hustle for a foul ball and whether or not that's the way he should play if he wants to preserve his body for a long Major League Baseball career. I still support that. If you're within the context of the game, within the course of play, if you are showing all-out 100-mile-an-hour hustle at all times, I'm great with that. I love that. But this, I struggle with having just come off a four-game suspension, yeah, and now you're running directly at an umpire again.
And he got it together. In his defense, he got it together. He slowed it down, but then he didn't like the "don't talk to me" thing. He basically got Ryan Leaf by the guy. As soon as he got there, and that seemed to incite him even more. And that's when guys had to push him and pull him away. 416-870-0590. The call itself, I mean, I don't know how you can make the argument that the call is not right. He leaned towards third base, had momentum going towards third base. And put it this way, he wouldn't have gone back and retouched second had the guy dropped the ball. Ergo, you can keep going at that point, and you got to go back to first and retouch the bases. You have to. And he didn't. Ken and Barry, you're on Sportsnet 590 The Fine. Fan, good morning, Ken.
Morning, guys. How are you?
Great.
I couldn't believe that happened. And then he ran back first, and he was arguing. You think a professional, you're going to know the rules. I played baseball till I was 16, and I've forgotten a lot in my life, but I know that rule. Once you pass the base, you have to tag up. I mean, and, you know, you could see what was funny is when he got called out, when they appealed and the second base umpire called him out, he got to within 20 feet of the ump, and the ump was already pointing at him, like telling him, yeah, calm down. And what I'm afraid about with Laurie is that he's a great player. He's got great hustle. He runs every ball out. He makes awesome defensive plays. He can hit. But, man, he's going to get a rep as a whiner. And it's not going to get any easier.
He already does. He's got a hothead rep among opposing players. I like the idea. I've said this before. I like the idea that you got a guy on the Jays who other players might actually resent. That's a good thing because, to me, the team was full of them in the late 80s and early 90s. You think opponents liked how George Bell approached the game? I bet you they didn't. You think guys liked the way Ricky Henderson handled himself or Dave Steeb handled himself? Bet you they didn't.
Even Kelly Gruber, I think, rubbed a lot of people the wrong way.
Yeah, 416-870-0590. Stephen Hamilton, you're on Sportsnet 590 The Fan.
Guys, I think you got to distinguish between Brett Laurie's problem is he plays with too much anger. It's only a matter of time. There's a difference between anger and passion, and he plays with too much anger. You're going to be talking about this. He's going to get a 10-gamer. If they can't bring him down a notch, then it's just a matter of time because he's going to punch somebody out because he plays so angry.
I feel like he'll be smarter than that, but I'm going to reiterate. Last week was a scary incident, and if you were Bill Miller, the home plate umpire, as incompetent as you may be, you might even be borderline corrupt. The only reason I felt for him was I thought at one point he must have thought he was in physical danger. I'm dead serious about that. I really think he thought he was going to be harmed in some way by Brett Laurie. I don't know how that wouldn't have entered his head with the speed and ferocity that Laurie came at him with, and let alone hitting him with the helmet, which just took a bad hop off the turf. Of course it did.
Well, I think all three of us would have felt the same way. If Brett Laurie came at us with that kind of look in his eye, we'd all have a little bit of fear.
I think Steve's onto something when he describes it as anger as opposed to that famous word passion we've been overusing since we started talking about Laurie. Yeah. There is something angry about him, amped up, whatever you want to call it. There's something there.
It's a big job for John Farrell, for a very talented ball player. A guy we hope is here and thrives for 10, 12, 14 years, but he's got to get that one aspect of his game under control. Lots of players have had to do it before. Scott and Bolden, you're on Sportsnet 590 The Fan. What'd you make of Laurie last night, Scott?
Well, he seemingly came unglued when the umpire wouldn't speak to him. And what these guys need to understand is umpires and officials don't need to explain anything. The rule book backs up what they've called. And then if he goes offside because he can't get a discussion or some discussion time with the umpire, there's a problem here. I mean, being passionate is one thing. Being disrespectful is completely another.
Yeah, let's get one more and appreciate the call. Aaron and Whitby, you're on Sportsnet 590 The Fan. What'd you make of last night, Aaron?
Hey, I'm just thinking along this aspect that I think now Brett Laurie may feel that he has, my 9-year-old son, I've been telling him, when you get in trouble once before, I think you might think in your head that you now have a target on yourself. You're now a target in school, just like how Brett Laurie may be a target playing baseball. So he gets offensive by the littlest thing, and that's why you see him rush out. But what he should really have done is, when he's, sit back and say, listen, I was wrong. I'm a man. I need to take my lumps and say, listen, the call was wrong. And I think that he thinks that now there may be a target on his back, and that's why he maybe just the slightest thing where you can see if he thought about it, yeah, I didn't tag up, I was wrong. But because what has happened in the past, that he thinks now maybe that he's a target for the umpires to pick on him easily.
It's funny how it works. I remember playing a game when I was 11, and I remember it was one of the biggest fights I've ever had with my father. And my father coached the team, but wasn't coaching third base. Another dad was. So we had a routine fly ball to center at third base. I think there's two out. So I'm running. I'm running on the pitch. I run home. The third base coach must have been, doing the crosswords or something. I mean, they didn't even invent Sudoku then. So he's sitting there watching me cross. You'd think he'd be like, no, get back, get your ass back here. There's one out, tag up. Nothing. Like, not a word. So I cross home plate. They double me off. And my dad just starts, like, I mean, it's near finger in the chest. And he's not a threatening man. I get along with my dad famously. But he's letting me have it for being so stupid. And most coaches' kids can relate to this because the dad has to be harder on you, right, than anybody else. You can't play favorites. And on this team, unlike any hockey team I ever played on, I was one of the better baseball players. Very average hockey player at best. But then I start pointing it. I start thinking, it's the third base coach's fault. So I start actually yelling at the other dad. This is not a great move when you're 11. You can't drive yourself home. I was lucky I had a ride home at that particular point. But I'm thinking that's where Lori's at. It's like you have to at some point look in the mirror and say, what did I do here? How did I come through this incident? How did I look after this incident? How much of it was my responsibility? I got to know how many outs there are. Just because the idiot third base coach who had a bad day at the office and isn't focusing, he's coming out to volunteer his time to coach a bunch of kids, and he's sitting there letting me get doubled off, but that's my fault at the end of the day. It is, and just like this play is Lori's fault. He might have known the rule and been so mad that he just got so wrapped up in the play he forgot it, and then he's blaming the ump for making the right call.
Again, that's why you have the manager. Just turn to the dugout and point to the ump and say, help me out here.
I know you're not drawing a direct comparison, but you're relating a story from when you were 11.
I was 11.
Brett Laurie's not.
But I was equally tatted up. I had a lot of work done to get these off my my bulging biceps.
A lot of energy bars back then?
Yeah, and then I came back after my dad basically reamed me out, and I ate seven granola bars. It was amazing. Your Toronto Marlies are taking on the Oklahoma City Barons in the AHL Western Conference Final. That's tonight, Ricoh Coliseum, Game 4. Win tickets to cheer them on in the fan club at sportsnet590.ca. Coming up, J.P. Arencibia, catcher for the Toronto Blue Jays, and the responsibility of a guy in between the glass and the NHL benches. Some people questioning the journalistic integrity of not reporting everything. We'll explain. 6:16. It's Brady and Lang on Sportsnet 590 The Fan.
The Fan. On demand. Now, more of Brady and Lang on Sportsnet 590, The Fan.
There goes Johnson to third, pitched up to a strike throw through, the tag by Lori, out at third base is Johnson on a great throw by Arencibia.
It's a day game today for the Toronto Blue Jays on the heels of their second game against the Tampa Bay Rays down at Tropicana Field. Ricky Romero will go against James Shields today, and that's off to Arlington, three games in Texas after a great homestand, both in terms of the crowds and obviously the results for the Toronto Blue Jays. We welcome in the American League Player of the Week, our Sportsnet 590 a baseball insider for Featherlight Ladders today. He is J.P. Arencibia. J.P., thanks for doing this. We appreciate it.
No problem.
What do you get? What do you get for American League Player of the Week? Like, you walk into McDonald's and you see Employee of the Month and you see a plaque. Do you expect anything in the mail? Is anything coming? This is a great award.
I don't know. I guess we'll find out. I got a lot of high fives though, so maybe that's part of it.
Does Romero make you pay for lunch for a couple of days because you won the award or something like that?
No chance. He's making $30 million. No. He's got to pay for everything.
you hit DH early in the series. Let me ask you how engaged you are. You're a catcher by nature, and you've done it your whole life. When you DH, does it take a little extra work to be as focused and dialed in to the game, or no?
Oh my God, does it ever?
Yeah,
I'm like friggin' patient everywhere. Just on Monday, I was in the clubhouse watching the game and pretending I was catching. I was squatting down, and I was like, maybe this works, because it's tough to DH, and especially when you're in on every pitch, every second of the game, and then all of a sudden you go from just having to go out there and hit.
You can
your mind is going nuts.
You can imagine, eh? Like, guys, you probably grew up watching. We did, too. Guys like Harold Baines, Edgar Martinez, they did it every day for, like, 10 straight years without taking the field. It's unbelievable.
Yeah, it's a lot tougher. People don't realize that being a DH, especially because you're not moving around. When I'm catching, you know, I'm moving around, my body's loose. When you're DHing, you're kind of just stationary, so you got to try to ride the bike and do things to keep your body warm so when you go back out there, you're still ready to go as opposed to just swinging on a cold body.
Is it equally tough for you to sort of give Jeff his space because he's catching that night, dealing with the pitchers, knowing he's going to have the dialogue with Kyle and the rest of the staff that night?
No. We talk back and forth always. There's always dialogue. There's no really space. You know, we bounce stuff off each other. You know, especially with catching every day almost, you know, it's I see these guys a lot more and obviously he's one of the best back there, but just being able to, hey, maybe this pitch will get him back or, you know, this and that. And we bounce stuff off each other. He's knowledgeable, but he also understands that back there, you know, I can do some things as well.
Your story's been a great success story for the major leagues, but you got a college teammate that just joined you. That's a pretty amazing story, actually, in his own right, in Yan Gomes. We learned a lot about him in the last 4 days, JP, but tell us something from the college days about your teammate, Yan Gomes.
It's unbelievable, and I don't even put it to sense on he's the first player of a country with full of great athletes to ever make it to the major leagues. I mean, that right there is pretty unbelievable. So it's, for me, obviously playing with him since I was in high school, and then in college, you know, he was a freshman, I was a junior, and kind of taking him under my wing. You know, I feel like a brother. It's almost like every time he does something, I want to run out of the field and just high five him because I'm just so proud and so excited to see that he's here and being able to live his dream out.
It was a great moment when Omar Vizquel comes up to him in the clubhouse after the game and hands him the ball for his first hit. That's one of those moments, I guess, as a baseball player, you never forget when something like that happens.
No, especially not from a guy like Mr. Vizquel. That guy is he's obviously a sure Hall of Famer, and you know, it's pretty cool because, you know, all of us grew up watching Vizquel and knowing about Vizquel, and now to have him on the team next to you is pretty special. So I'm sure for him as well to have a guy like that, give him that ball, it's pretty cool.
JP Arencibi is our guest. It's the Jays and the Rays today. They're off to Texas after this. Of course, James Shields, Ricky Romero go today in an afternoon game right here on Sportsnet 590 The Fan. Now, we bring up Vizquel. We want to talk about your, I guess we'd call it walk-on music. Some people call it at-bat music. But we saw Geddy Lee, Canadian rock legend, at the game the other night, and Omar Vizquel has been using Rush music going up. Have you altered? I know you've gone back and forth with a couple different tunes, but what would make you go from one tune to the other? Do you want one for each different year? It's the kind of cool thing that players in the 70s and 80s just didn't get to do. It never occurred to people to let a player pick a song to go up to bat to.
Honestly, I don't even know if Vizquel knows that he has a walkout. I mean, he's the way he is, he's so old school that he doesn't even care for that. But for myself, at the beginning of the year, I was sucking with the one that I had on. So I just said, you know, might as well switch it up. And Ricky gave me a song, and I just said, whatever, sure. And put it on and started hitting. So that's going to stick.
Okay, now at Rogers Center, when you go up to bat, of like all the players, JP, they have a pitcher with your stats, and yours looks like the cover of a country music CD. You have the cowboy hat, and you're looking off. It's a nice shot, but are you thinking of cutting a country music album in the off season?
You know, I have to look at myself in the mirror sometimes and realize that, one, singing's not one of my talents, and two, I don't know how many Cuban country singers there are out there. I don't know if that's a pretty big thing, so I don't think that's for me. I think I'm going to leave it to the Aldeans and the Luke Bryans of the world and let them take care of it.
When you look at where you guys are this year compared to last, I feel like you must sense it, more optimism, more excitement. Obviously, I think fans are coming earlier. It's tough in any market and in the North, whether you got a dome or not, I'd say in April and May. And then there's hockey playoffs in this country on and on. But you must sense a difference. Do you think that's what you guys are doing? But also, when you look at the standings, and I know it's in players' habits too. Managers will say they don't, and your GM Alex will say he doesn't. But it's there for the taking, isn't it, with some teams getting out to bad starts and you guys being pretty consistent about it.
Well, I think actually everyone's kind of got off to a good start anyway. So, I mean, it's because our record is a pretty good record. And in our division, it's I don't even know where we stand right now, but I know in our division it's probably third or fourth. So guys, actually, you know, they haven't really gotten off to a slow start. We've gotten off to a good one with some other teams. So I think we control our own destiny, though. So when we look at other people, it doesn't, all that does is hinder, you know, our goals and our team efforts. So I think we go out there and we take care of business on an everyday basis and control what we can control. Then later on in the season, we're standing on the record, getting ready to play in the playoffs. And for the fans and the support, it's been, I mean, on Sunday, it was ridiculous. We were in a dugout, you know, and it's something that we talk about in the dugout. You know, we're going crazy on how many fans there were and how much, you know, how bad we wanted to push and be able to win the game. And not any more than any other day, but, you know, how much we were talking about it. Due to all the fans and all the people that were there, we wanted to put on a show for them. And that's pretty special. I think, you know, it definitely makes us a better ball club. And you know, I think baseball is, you know, turning around in Toronto.
For you personally, JP, your batting average has shot up by a huge margin since beginning of the season. Was there something that you work with Dwayne Murphy mechanically that changed, or something just off the field that changed that made you such an effective hitter the last few weeks?
Well, I think that, you know, you look at my track record, I've always been able to hit through the minor leagues. And even last year, my average was down, but, you know, my production was there. So the hitting's always been there. It's just been a part of you know, learning the pitchers and getting more comfortable with the league and just, you know, feeling comfortable. It's you know, it's not easy when you're your first year and you're facing guys for the first time. When you start to face guys multiple times, you know what the pitches are going to do. You kind of have an idea what they're going to try to do to you. And so it makes the at-bats a little bit more comfortable. So, the biggest thing for me is just being able to get ready on time and you know, stay consistent with that. When I'm doing that, I'm a pretty good hitter. I'm going to put the ball in play and you know, hit hard. And that's my plan. So, you know, everything's been going well. And you know, the beginning was the beginning. That's water under the bridge. You know, you start slow and three hits can make your average grow up 100 points in the beginning of the season. So I'm just worried about going out there and putting it at bats and, you know, helping our team win.
Yeah, a number at the end matters, that's for sure. J.P. Arencibia, our guest, the American League Player of the Week, of course, last week with a fantastic week at the plate and behind it as well. Now, before you go, I noticed Ozzie Guillen quits Twitter last week. He just gave it. I don't know how you don't have a retirement ceremony or anything. Let me ask you, I mean, D-listers like Jim and I, it's amazing. Sometimes I wonder if it's all worth it. How do you ever look at it and say, man, this is great, it's interactive, it's fun, it's wonderful, but man, it's sometimes it's more headaches than it's worth, including the thing in April with the guy in Long Island?
No, you know, I don't get bothered by it, because it's, at the end of the day, it's people behind a keyboard writing whatever they want to write. So for me, I use it for the positive side, which is being able to interact with fans and the people that, you know, that care to interact with us in a positive way. Fortunately, there's a block button in on Twitter, and I'll block every single person that writes anything negative, because I don't have Twitter for any negativity. I have Twitter, like I said, for positive people and for the people that you know, want to support us through good and bad times. So, It's fun. It's a good tool. It's great to be able to reach out to fans and stuff like that. And the negative part, you just kind of laugh it off, and then I just block them. I don't care about them. And I don't care to listen. I don't care to see what they say.
I'm glad you said that, because I treat it, JP, like if you're walking down the street and somebody comes up and insults you, you're going to keep walking. I'm not going to stand there and argue with you about why I'm not a bad person, you know, or not an idiot, or not whatever, right? You just keep going. Life's too short to stop for people like that.
Yeah, I mean, it doesn't matter. At the end of the day, what do those people make a difference in our lives? They don't. They have no outcome in my career or anything that goes on in my life. So I'm not worried. That the guy that I kind of took a jab back at in April, it was pretty funny, because it was, you know, a guy that could dish it and talk smack, but then as soon as I gave it back to him, he kind of went and cried like a, you know, baby. So it was funny, and you know, whatever it is, I wasn't ever trying to make any offensive jokes. It was just a knock back at him for taking a knock at me, and kind of sometimes people condition and can't take it.
That's a two-way street. Listen, best of luck today against the Rays, and, of course, the rest of the road trip, and then it'll be good to see you guys back home. A lot more interleague play in June also, so we look forward to seeing you down at the ballpark. Thanks for this.
No problem. Thank you.
Thanks again. There's J.P. Arencibia for joining us for Featherlight Ladders on Sportsnet 590 The Fan. And hanging in at that number five hitting spot. If you missed our interview with JP, we'll re-roll it for 8:20 this morning. Coming up, Steve Lepore from puckthemedia.com. The NHL finals schedule is set. No day games. Why indeed that is. And yes, when you're between the glass, a la Ray Ferraro, Pierre Maguire, others, should you be responsible for all that happens between the benches to your audience? It's Brady and Lang on Sportsnet 590 The Fan. We check Sportsnet 590. And the money game right now with Acura presenting zero down and zero reasons to look elsewhere. Visit your Acura retailer to get zero down, zero security deposit on the wonderful, legendary 2012 MDX. Here's Richard Southern.
Good morning, gentlemen. U.S. cable channel Turner Broadcasting System has received the rights to the new wild card games created by Major League Baseball's revamp of the postseason. CBS will televise the AL and NL single elimination wildcard games this season and next. MLB has also announced that two division series games this year and next will shift from TBS to the MLB network. This will be the first time the league's official cable network will air postseason games. Can't wait. You know, if the season ended today, guys, as you know, the Jays would be in that second wildcard spot. Can't wait for Americans to get a look at Brett Laurie, the most exciting baseball player to play for the Jays, from what I can remember.
And a future pro wrestler. I think we got to be perfectly honest about this. Randy Savage played minor league baseball. I mean,
the situation, though, with the helmet and the situation last night, he had a valid point in both of those situations.
Oh, Richard.
He did.
It was a bad call. It was a good call last night, actually.
No, it was very. He barely made any motion towards Thursday.
But barely made any is some. So once you make some.
But he had a right to ask for clarification.
You know, I barely snorted any cocaine before coming in this morning, but that still makes me a drug user.
Do you remember a player to ever play for the Jays that wanted so badly to play for the Jays that had his heart in it as much as Brett Laurie? I can't recall anybody.
Probably just Vernon Wells and Alex Rios.
Oh, get out of town. Road hockey guys could soon be legal in Toronto. City staff today will unveil a list of exemptions to the Public Works Committee. The proposal calls for road hockey only on less traveled routes with average speed limits of 40 clicks or less. Community councils would have the final say. Sport currently banned on city streets with people subject to a $55 fine, although very few, if any, fines have been handed out.
All righty. Hey, you know, Vince Carter had been a Blue Jay, I'd say him, but I didn't get a chance to.
You know, I don't know what you're...
Vesa Toscola.
Oh, my goodness.
We'll get more at 8:30. Thanks, Richard.
Go
Here's
ahead,
Richard
Laurie.
Southern with the money game. Richard, a big fan of covering up your arms with ink. We'll give him a live tattoo on the air at 8:30. Coming up, it's Steve Lepore from Puck the Media. And, yeah, Pierre Maguire under some heavy criticism. Is it deserved? Brady and Lang, Sportsnet 590 The Fan, and Sportsnet 590 The Fan. Mm-hmm.
The Fan on demand. Now, more of Brady and Lang on Sportsnet 590. The Fan.
All right, Steve Lepore on the issues surrounding the AES final schedule, a few other things, ratings in the U.S. and whatnot, and then we'll get to this Pierre Maguire issue. But I hope you guys heard Brett Laurie document that Omar Vizquel really has no concept of the at-bat music. You guys thought it was a big tribute to Geddy Lee, Neil Peart, Alex Lifeson, and Rush. And as it turned out, they could be playing Mahler, and he wouldn't know the difference.
Okay, I think JP was taking a shot at the age of Vizquel. That was sort of a veiled shot. At he's an old man. Like, he doesn't know how to pick music. But, I mean, he has respect for Geddy Lee. He sees Geddy Lee
there. There's no guarantee of that. No, he doesn't. First of all, Geddy basically hides going into games. He may as well be the Unabomber sitting three rows behind home plate. You'd have no idea it was him if the camera didn't put it on him.
You can't, when you're sitting in those seats that close to the on-deck circle, you can't miss anyone.
When Kid Rock goes to every single Detroit sporting event known to mankind, you don't go, gee, is that Kid Rock? You know it's him. He's not hiding under a floppy hat and sunglasses.
Greg, you don't understand. I need to believe that,
yes,
Omar Vizquel is picking his music deliberately to pay homage
to
the great rock trio that is Rush.
The greatest rock trio. Thanks, friend. Boom.
Actually, if Omar Vizquel was picking Depeche Mode, it'd break my heart if I found out that he didn't actually pick it, that it was just the club, the house DJ.
Thanks for understanding.
At the Rogers Center. Yeah.
Yeah.
All right, so the NHL finals are halfway full as far as the dance card goes. They'll start a week from, tonight, Wednesday. So it's an 8-day break for the Los Angeles Kings. Could be a lot shorter one for either the Rangers and the Devils. A great blog to keep up with broadcasting of the NHL. And, of course, on both sides of the border is the Puck the Media blog, and the proprietor of it is one Steve Lepore, and he joins us now on Brady and Lang. Good morning.
Good morning, Greg and Jim. I was more alarmed than anything to hear that Omar Vizquel is still kicking around.
Is he older? And Rush at the same time, really. I mean, retire. Both, please.
I was wondering if Omar is older than Gaddy at this point.
It's pretty close, I would think, isn't it?
They're over 140 combined. I think that's the best way to consider. I want to ask you about the Pierre Maguire issue in a minute, but any surprise at all in terms of how these games are laid out? There's a lot of people that don't like, obviously, a two-day break between Game 1 and Game 2 in the next round in the Stanley Cup Finals. Is this based on arena availability? Is it TV needs for NBC and NBC Sports Network? What's the reason?
Well, I think, you know, obviously CBC would, I think... It means an overstatement, but I think CBC would play every Stanley Cup final game on Saturday night. We'd be doing this through August if they had their way. But NBC is okay with having the games on Saturday night and going from Wednesday to Saturday. Because in years when, and it's not this year because of the late schedule and the start because of the lockout, but in years when the NBA finals and Stanley Cup finals are interceding with each other, the NBA will take Tuesday, Thursday, and Sunday, and the NHL obviously wants to avoid the NBA finals. They've occasionally gone up head-to-head with each other in the past years, and the numbers haven't been pretty. So a Monday, Wednesday, Saturday rotation affects things or changes things quite nicely and keeps them out of the way there. So I think it works pretty well for everybody, though Saturday nights are kind of a dead spot in terms of television, but it's not as if putting them on Thursday or Friday nights would be that much better.
Steve, I noticed that on games 3 and 4, they're not on the full NBC network. They're on NBC Sports Network. How available is that to cable carriers in America, that cable channel?
Well, it's still getting better. It's up to 79, 80 million, and I think they're going to be on pretty much all day during the Olympics in London as sort of the number two network behind NBC. And supplementing their coverage with a lot of stuff. I think that'll help a lot. But it is true. There was actually CNBC, the financial network, was airing games during the first and second round of the postseason. And the weird thing was that CNBC is actually available in a lot more homes than NBC Sports Network. Not that it helped the ratings much, as CNBC aired some of the lowest rated games of the playoffs.
Well, you guess. You live in the New Jersey area, and you grew up a Devils fan. Tell me what you think the distinction will be between a Kings-Rangers final in terms of ratings and a Kings-Devils final.
I think early on it would have a big effect. The Devils' ratings in the playoffs have been about, well, we can't really judge it at this point because the two teams' fan bases are combined into one market, as New Jersey and New York are all in the same New York market. But the Devils' ratings have been about half what the Rangers' ratings have been. Still not bad numbers, but not exactly a blockbuster. I think it would affect the ratings early on in the series. The first few games would be a little bit low, but I think as you carry on with the series, if it goes longer, 5 or 6 or 7 games, you have some definite storylines. You have, you know, Carter and Richards looking to win a championship away from Philadelphia, and the fun enigma that is Dustin Penner, and hopefully every Hollywood IHOP is doing great business this morning. Marty Brodeur going after one last shot at the title at 40 would be I think a great storyline that would draw some people in. But if you get Kings Rangers, on the other hand, you get, you know, blockbuster New York LA headlines. I don't think it would be the greatest ratings on earth, as some people have predicted, because there is still a lot of growing to be done in Los Angeles and New York, where, you know, you're still getting Mike Francesa here in New York sounding very confused about.
Say no more. Say no more.
All that, but
well, he's still not sure. He's still not sure if you have to pay for using Twitter. So once that gets clarified, yeah, then we're in great shape.
Yeah.
We know that Pierre Maguire is going to be working between the benches down ice level for the NBC and NBC Sports Network. Do you find he has a responsibility, or anyone who works between the glass, Steve, that there's a fight between the coaches like DeBoer and Tortorella to kind of tell the viewer what happened without using any of the foul language, of course.
Yeah, I think this is the disconnect. I think there was a way, unless those two were just swearing at each other constantly without any you know, pronouns or integers in between them. I think there might have been a way that Pierre could have told, you know, a cleaned up version of what they were talking about, at least a little bit about what the fight was about. I think he mentioned that the two of them were making fun of where the other one, or yelling about where the other one of them came from, and seems just a little bit too vague. If you're going to have a guy in between the benches, then and you're going to visibly see him, you know, looking on as DeBoer and Tortorella's argument went on. I think you're kind of missing the point of, you know, having the guy in between the benches if they're not going to be able to say anything about that. I don't necessarily think there is an access issue limiting them, but I think it could be a little bit of self-censorship at worst, but I certainly hope not. I certainly hope that it was just the fact that DeBoer and Tortorella were incessantly swearing at each other, which kind of delights me.
Steve Lepore from the Puck the Media blog. Incessant swearing is wonderful. Steve Lepore joining us. Let me ask you about Tortorella. Could I make the argument that as frosty as he's been at times, he is now, based on these playoffs, maybe alone, Steve, the most recognizable and prominent NHL coach in America? His press conference are played all the way through, sometimes on SportsCenter, sometimes on ESPN Radio, and that matters. It's not Dan Bylsma. No one's walking down the street in average town America going, yeah, did you see Peter Laviolette last night? It's all talk about Tortorella, isn't it?
Yeah, well, I think the part of I think 24/7 is making stars out of a lot of these coaches that have been on it. I think we all know who Bruce Boudreau is and who Dan Bylsma is not exactly the most demonstrative guy in the world, but we all know who those guys were from 24/7, and now I think we know who Laviolette and more prominently Tortorella are, but Tortorella, you know, he's made a name for himself during the postseason, and you could argue it's for good. But you know, the ratings are still down from Boston, Tampa last year to New York, New Jersey. So it hasn't necessarily helped. I haven't seen the post game show ratings for either network to see if people are sticking around more to hear what Tortorella is going to say. I think it's taken a lot of the shine and a lot of the promotion of the series off of the actual teams. And I don't know if that's ever necessarily a good thing. I wonder if you try to keep it on the ice, but it's hard to necessarily promote 20 block shots a game.
Now, before you go, you work awfully hard on the blog, but it's going to gain more national prominence. We got about 30 seconds, but explain where your Puck the Media blog is going and why it'll get more views, more hits.
Well, starting tomorrow, it'll be available at puckthemedia.com. It'll be on SB Nation, which houses your friends, the pension plan puppets, and a lot of other great websites. And just it'll have more access to a lot of people who are too lazy to type in .wordpress. And
hey.
Oh. I think, not that you guys
are. Oh, gosh. Okay.
But I think it'll be – I've always wanted to just have it be, you know, a .com and have it be very simple and clean and not anything messy and a little bit boring looking like the old place was, but I'm really looking forward to it.
All right, well, don't leave out the incessant swearing. Put that in once in a while.
I'll try not
right.
to.
No, try to.
I'm trying not to leave it out.
Steve Lepore joining us from Puck the Media. Thanks so much, Steve. We appreciate it.
Thanks, guys. Good to talk to you.
We'll have time to debate this a lot more later in the show, and after we have our hockey insider Nick Kypros on. What's your initial thought on McGuire and between the benches, and what do you? It's a slippery slope either way. I think we can concur there.
I've done it for lacrosse. I mean, the language gets blue down there, but I think you have to tell the listeners the gist of what's happening when there's an argument between coach and ref or coach and coach, and just clean up the language. That's what you're there for.
Yeah, the NHL is kind of getting what it deserves here, I think. I've always been a little bit confused by the whole concept of having a reporter, for lack of a better term, in that position, but I think it was all kind of just window dressing until now, and it gave the illusion that we were getting more insight from that person in that role. We're not. We never have.
I think you are. I still think you are.
Really?
Sometimes. Yes, really. Depends on who's between the glass, I find.
Maybe. I also think it's a great angle. It's a great angle to see things and certainly know whether guys are, you know, you can see just the little minute details of the game. But we'll have plenty of time to debate it in our 7 o'clock hour. On the way back, the Jays hammered by Tampa. They lose. Chance to win the series still. And a remarkable feat in baseball. We'll tell you about it. 7-10 off the field as opposed to on it. But it was at a game. It's Brady and Lang, Sportsnet 590 The Fan.